Welcome to Innovation. I'm Kara Hetland, and joining me in the studio today is Dr. Sean Vong. He is a neurosurgeon for both pediatric and adult patients. And you're here because you're homegrown. You left and you came back. So this is kind of that fun story about South Dakota kid growing up and coming home. I know you're laughing, but you were raised in the Sioux Falls, Tri-Valley, right?
Yeah.
Well, area.
I went to school at West Central. First, thanks for having me here. This is a very nice studio. Originally grew up in Hartford, so just outside of Sioux Falls, pretty much Sioux Falls area, and went to high school at West Central, graduated from there, and then went to USD for undergrad and med school. Then I was fortunate enough to match in Cincinnati for neurosurgery, so I went out there for my six-year residency training there, and then a one-year fellowship at Cincinnati Children's. And now I'm back at Sanford.
And now you're back.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about med school. And did you know in med school? I mean, when in med school did you know that you wanted to focus on neurosurgery?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. It was hard to know. At first, I think I wanted to be in anesthesia or emergency medicine, particularly emergency medicine, because at that time I was volunteering for the ambulance in Vermilion. It was an awesome experience to be doing that. And as I got through med school, I was kind of surprised at the lack of definitive care that the ER provided. You know, it was kind of, I feel like, and maybe the ER docs will get mad at me for saying this, but I kind of feel like it is a little bit of triage, right? You're seeing a lot of worried well, and ultimately, if something really terrible comes in, the trauma surgeon will start to direct it, or the neurosurgeon starts to direct it. And then that's what really kind of prompted me to start to head that direction. I always had some interest in neuroscience. And during med school, I was doing research with Gina Forrester. She was really involved in neurobiology, particularly addiction pathways, which was fascinating. It was more psych related, but we were looking at how brains were changing with methamphetamine use at that time. So that was very interesting. And so then that further drove me that direction. And then ultimately I was with my now wife at that time, and she was very supportive and said, you know, you got to chase your dream. And so there we go. And I eventually landed on neurosurgery then.
And so you were one, talk a little bit about the matching process and how that really works when you're ready to do your match after you graduate.
Yeah. So medicine is very different from every other career because you have to apply for the match. And so the way that the match works is that you go and interview for your dream jobs, but instead of the dream jobs offering you a position and then you choosing among the positions you've been offered like normal, you have to just apply a rank list. And so everybody that they rank will have their list in order of who they want as a candidate, and all the candidates rank the places that they interviewed, and then an algorithm decides where you have to go. By accepting the match process, you're legally obligated to go to at least 1 year of where you match to. And so that process is kind of crazy because people kind of turn their life into this computer, and then you don't know where you're going to end up until match day, which is traditionally in March.
And then you have to be there by?
July 1st is the start date for all the new medicine residents, yeah.
Yeah. And so how did you, I mean, you talked a little bit about your interests, but did you interview in other areas and then decide what you liked? I mean, you physically have to pay yourself to go to these interviews, right?
No question, yeah. That's all out of your own pocket at that time. So you're already in debt, you know, the 200,000-300,000 at least for a state school. And I met some other friends who went to the private schools on the East Coast. They're in debt like $600,000 to $800,000, and then paying out of pocket to go to as many interviews as you can to hopefully match into your specialty of choice is very stressful. But
how many places did you go?
I went on 12 interviews total for neurosurgery.
Wow. How far? I mean, was Ohio the furthest that you went, or did you go all over?
Vermont, Salt Lake City, Ohio, Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri. Yeah, all over. I mean, really all over.
And you were the only one in your class to match in neuroscience?
Yeah, the only neurosurgeon to match, I think, for at that point, it had been 2 or 3 years since we had matched a neurosurgeon. And then I found out USC matched a neurosurgeon about a year ago. So there was about a seven-year gap or so before we matched another neurosurgeon out of the USC class.
Wow.
Yep.
And so the hospitals, because you have during med school, you have relationships with the local hospitals, yes? Mm-hmm,
yep.
And so then they're going to keep track of you.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And that's what happened here? They're like, are you ready to come home? I mean, so you have your residency, you have a fellowship. I mean, how many years more of education did you have before you came back?
Yeah, that's a great question. I did 4 years of undergrad and then was lucky enough to get into med school, and there's 4 years of medical school. As you kind of were alluding to, there's the med school process itself is kind of the bottleneck. There's thousands and thousands of applicants per year, and if you're in that lucky 1%, you do get into medical school. So that was huge. And then for neurosurgery itself, it's 6, but now 7 years across the nation. You have to train for 7 years to be finished with residency, and then an optional 1 to 2 year fellowship after that. So grand total of 15 post high school, I think.
But you're in the trenches. You're not just, it's not book learning. You're hands-on learning, correct?
Yes. Yeah, so the first through med school is mostly, I would still say mostly book learning. Mm-hmm. You do get to interact with patients during the second half of med school, which is really nice and kind of starts to get you towards what you've been dreaming of. And then residency is very much the work, the straight work of being a physician. I mean, you're just in the trenches doing everything that you need to be doing. And it's can be trial by fire at times, but it's good. I mean, it's a good learning experience, and there's no question that I feel prepared to be back and help the community. So, yeah.
So talk a little bit about some of the research that you were involved with during your residency and your fellowship.
Yeah. So I was, the biggest project that I was involved with a few smaller projects, but the biggest project that I was involved with dealt with congenital hydrocephalus. Are you familiar with that at all?
No.
No, yeah. So everybody thinks about the brain as kind of two hemispheres like this, but actually it's a hollow on the inside. And there's these natural openings where the spinal fluid is made. The spinal fluid travels down the back of the brain and then into the spinal cord where it gets absorbed and then goes into the bloodstream. And unfortunately, what can happen is that some kind of disruption happens during growth in which the spinal fluid can't be absorbed. And then those pockets get larger and larger and push the brain up against the skull. And so then that's what hydrocephalus is. Unfortunately, the only way that we have to treat hydrocephalus now is something called a shunt. And it's a very simple device. It pretty much is a catheter which is placed into those pockets and then runs down underneath the skin and goes into the abdomen where it just drains the spinal fluid in there and then the abdominal wall absorbs it. This has been the same invention that has been used in kids with hydrocephalus since the 50s.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And we haven't really improved upon it that much. So
how common is it?
Hydrocephalus is the most common pathology that we treat as pediatric neurosurgeons by far. I would say on average, a pediatric neurosurgeon treats 40 to 50% of their patients have hydrocephalus.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's common, but not something that they've tried to improve upon treatment.
Well, right. Well, so we have tried to improve upon the treatment with weird devices and different kind of pressure monitors and different kinds of surgeries. But the truth is we just don't understand hydrocephalus that well. It's really interesting because despite all of the medical technology out there, we still don't know exactly where spinal fluid is absorbed, and that's the whole problem. And so that's what my research kind of revolved around. We were looking at a new congenital model of hydrocephalus in rats and mice. And the issue with it is that our previous research models were not real. They didn't really mirror the pathology that people have and that kids have. And so the NIH stopped funding it because they were like, this really doesn't make sense. And so they wanted to move forward with congenital models. We were lucky enough to kind of almost stumble upon a mouse model that had hydrocephalus pretty consistently, but we didn't understand why. And so my project kind of was just looking at characterizing that model and to try to figure out what exactly was going wrong with those cells that led to hydrocephalus to begin with. And because of that work, I was awarded a national award for hydrocephalus from that. So that was pretty cool.
Very, congratulations.
Thank you.
So now you're bringing all of this knowledge here. And how is that working out for you in your practice?
So far, so good. So I've only been at it for 4 to 5 weeks now. And I still feel pretty fresh. I mean, I'm still having trouble like getting around the hospital, you know? So
there's a lot of tunnels.
Yeah. No, yes. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So it's funny because every day I've been finding another new shortcut. I've been following the signs that are for the visitors, and everybody's asking me why I'm walking around the long way. but we're getting there. Yeah.
That's funny. So about a month, and so now your niche is that you're a neurosurgeon for both pediatrics and adults.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And this is a new type of practice, would you say?
Yeah, I would say that it's not necessarily a new practice here in Sioux Falls, but it's uncommon for a pediatric trained person to do both adult and peds now. More and more pediatric trained neurosurgeons are going into a pediatric only practice. But historically speaking, I'm going to say guys, because it was mostly all men, trained and those guys came out and would do both, but not necessarily with a pediatric fellowship. And so, but actually it was that history that kind of pulled me to pediatrics to begin with. Neurosurgery, you can actually subspecialize in a lot of very specialized areas such as trauma, spine, vascular, tumor, things like that. But in my mind, that kind of narrowed you down even further. And I really enjoyed the broad practice of neurosurgery. And so actually, I've kind of felt like doing the residency plus pediatrics kind of added to all the tools I could to provide. And so I was excited to do peds. And peds was kind of the last subdivision of surgery that does everything. They still do spine and trauma and congenital abnormalities. And so that's what kind of drew me to that to begin with. And so I'm excited to be back and be doing both adult and peds.
And when Samford reached out to you to maybe consider coming back, what were some of the conversations that you had about, is this really where I want to go, or I could go so many other places?
Yeah, that's a good point. So we had, my wife and I thought a lot about this, about coming home, obviously being close to family. She's from here, I'm from here originally. And so that was a large part of the discussion about coming back. What do I want in my practice? And at the same time, Sanford was building or just built the castle. And so they were talking about building their peds program. And so it kind of just seemed like a good fit. So that's why we came back.
Okay.
Yeah.
To be closer to home.
That's right.
Do you plan on having a lab, doing more research, adding that part to your practice too?
Yeah, I mean, the thoughts crossed my mind.
You're still young, right?
Yeah, you have time. We'll see. I mean, maybe once I start getting around the hospital well, then we can move on to step two.
Figure out where that lab might be.
Yeah, right. Where is the lab? And we'll move forward from there.
But is there an area that you really think you really want to focus on and concentrate on, or are you just right now focusing on building a practice?
From a research perspective? Mm-hmm. Oh, I am still very interested in hydrocephalus. I mean, I think that that's a problem that plagues so many kids, and definitely it's something that pediatric neurosurgeons think about almost on a daily basis, and the fact that we know so little about it is just upsetting. And so I'm kind of hoping that in time we start to really develop the pathways and figure out what exactly we can do. Maybe even from a medical perspective, maybe a pill that you could take that would help with the hydrocephalus or even cure the hydrocephalus. And so I hope that we develop that, even if it puts me out of doing any shunts. So, yeah.
And that would be okay with you,
oh,
right?
Absolutely. Yep.
Right. Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for taking time and coming on and letting us get to know you a little
bit. No, yeah,
better.
Thank you for having me.